Premier Talk on Kaya 959, on the street, on the air.
It is a very good evening to you. It's just gone a minute after 7. You are listening to Kaya 959 and you are listening to Talk with myself, Sotumea. We are together for the next hour. Hopefully you've had a fantastic day. You enjoyed the public holiday as well as commemorating June 16. And of course, a very big thank you to Gula Chumfupi, who is just leaving the studio. And on that note, talking about Youth Day, today I think she was having another one of those important conversations, and of course talking about youth and entrepreneurship, teaching children entrepreneurship when they're still young and the brains are still fresh. If you missed that conversation, simply go to Kaya 959 and do listen to a podcast of that show, and of course all the other shows that we have right here on Kaya 959.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959, on the street, on the air.
It is now 2 minutes after 7 o'clock, and as I said earlier on, that of course today we are commemorating and looking back and remembering 1976, and of course talking about issues that are around June 16. And I thought this would be a really great time to talk about, you know, I suppose the youth, talking about adolescence, which I think for a lot of parents, you know, sometimes it feels like adolescents are like from another planet completely. So today we are going to be talking to Dr. Natalie Solomon, who's just going to be chatting to us about what it means to have an adolescent, in the sense that how does their brain work, so maybe they can sort of, you know, bridge the gap between parents and your adolescents at home, and you're not quite understanding what is happening. They speak a different language, they dress differently, they eat differently, they're just completely different. So this is sort of to just help us understand, at least help parents understand what it means to be an adolescent and what their brains are going through in that period. And of course, without any further delay, let us say a very good evening to Dr. Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us, and a very good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. So you've written this paper that basically explains why adolescents are just the way that they are, so different, and nobody understands them. And, you know, more importantly, I think none of us actually ever remember that we were adolescents ourselves at some point and behaved exactly the same way. But let's first of all talk about what is an adolescent, because we might have different definitions of what it is, but what is an adolescent?
Okay, absolutely. So I think research into adolescence has been ongoing for years, and in fact, we can even track back to Shakespeare talking about the nuisance of adolescence. But the more recent research in the last couple of years has really reshaped our understanding of adolescence. And what it's explained is that adolescence is roughly the period between 12 and 24 years of age. So it's really increased in terms of the last stage, or the amount of years that we traditionally thought of as adolescence.
Because I would have thought like 18, 19.
Absolutely. And traditionally, we did think that, you know, you're grown up and you can make certain big decisions in terms of who you vote for, in terms of what you're going to study, in terms of life choices at university. But actually, increasingly, we found out that the brain continues to change up until we're 24 years of age. And in fact, the parts of the brain that are incredibly important for adult decisions, such as our executive thinking and our rational parts that are able to take multiple perspectives and are able to empathize well with others, that's the prefrontal cortex, that is only finished developing by the age of 24.
At 24.
So you're not fully formed until 24.
So you are basically saying that if we're walking around there talking to 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, you're actually still talking to somebody whose brain is still growing.
Absolutely. So I would say don't make any huge life decisions before you're 24 years of age. There's, you can experiment and explore, but don't make any huge commitments beforehand. Because really, the way our brain is wired, its functioning and its capacity are all changing significantly during this time. And so, in fact, the way we remember, the way we think or reason or focus our attention or make decisions, and even the way we relate to others, is undergoing significant transformation during these years. Mm-hmm. And only is at its developed set point by the time we're 24.
Well, that's very important to note. If you're just joining us, it is six minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya 959, and the voice you're listening to is Dr. Natalie Solomon, and she is a clinical psychologist. And today we're talking about the adolescent brain. For me, it's mind-blowing that, you know, adolescence actually doesn't stop at about 18, 19, goes on to about 24 years when the brain is still developing. And I think it's great insight for a lot of people, because you find a lot of people wanting to change or wanting to go back on the decisions that they might have made in their early 20s, and that could possibly explain that. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, if you'd like to ask any questions, maybe you're trying to deal with an adolescent at home, the number to dial is 086-000-00959. That is 086-000-00959. Remember, you can SMS us 36959. We are on Twitter at Kaya On Air, and of course you can tweet me personally as well. My Twitter handle is at Sototu if you'd like to join in on the conversation, and if you'd like to ask any questions at all that have to do with adolescence, you know, if you've got a young one at home between the ages of 12 and 24. Now, doctor, you know, you find a lot of people, you did say earlier that you make very important, you know, we put so much pressure on young people, especially after 18. They choose which school to go to, they choose what career they want to go into, what they want to study. And at the same time, you know, you get a lot of people that making life decisions, deciding to get married and have children at that age. And you were saying that at that age, the brain, of course, is still growing. So what are the signs that somebody is still an adolescent, especially when you've gone past what we would think is an adolescent, like 18 years old, 19 years old, but at 20 you assume that this is somebody that is now, you know, a young adult. So what are some of those signs where you know that your child is going through adolescence? Or as well, let's talk about when it starts, when it kicks in, what to look out for as a parent.
So the period of adolescence, while it is very tricky and it is very complex, it's also an amazing time in terms of opportunities. And so I think that it really needs to be from that perspective that we understand our children. So there are four characteristic qualities to adolescence in terms of the way they behave that's completely different to another developmental phase. And each of these qualities has both its upsides and its downsides. Mm-hmm. And so there's exceptional strength, but there's also very unique vulnerabilities. And so one of the things that typically alerts us to an adolescent in our presence would be a brain that is very much driven for reward. Okay. There's this kick for dopamine. There's this thrill-seeking behavior. And actually, their brains are primed to take risks. I mean, part of it is our evolutionary history, that we actually wanted to get the kids out of the home and be curious about the world and begin to explore and make sense of the world around them and move them out of their comfort zone. So they really are pushed to be experimental, to be very curious about the world around mm-hmm. them, and to actually seek out risky behavior. The difficulty is that at the same time as they're seeking out risky behavior, their brain is wired to focus on the positive outcome and less on the consequences.
Okay.
So they really place a lot of weight on the benefits, but very few on the potential risks. And so, in fact, we do see is very scary, dangerous behavior, increased risk for injury, increased risk for addiction. In fact, the stats even say 300% increase for morbidity for teenagers. Very, very frightening.
So, can you do anything about it? I mean, because I'm listening to this and I've got very small kids, thankfully. They're still very small, 6 and 3, so I'm not yet there. But I wonder, as a parent, if you know that teenagers are prone to risky behavior and it's their brain, really, they're not going out of their way to make your life a misery. Yes. It's just the way that they are wired. Now, are there ways to counter that and not completely counter it, but you sort of like steer them in the right direction? Yeah. Or is it one of those where we just sit there and we're just sitting ducks and just cross your arms,
not
your legs,
at all.
Yeah, and just hope for
not
the best.
At all. Yeah, I think the difficulty is that adolescents are not so easy to like, and that often they push us away.
Yeah.
But it's precisely at this time that we have to stay close. And so the first point would be is that we don't take their behavior personally, and we do have to grow quite a thick skin as parents around them. But then it is that actually we can harness those drives and that we can really kind of push it into sports, into creative exploration, into community engagement, into kind of steering them towards charities or steering them towards innovation and invention. So we do have to structure the environment so that it caters to this dopamine drive, but in a way that's safe and in a way that's useful so that we see positive outcomes rather than the risky behavior that has potentially life-threatening consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So sports is a great space if your child is that way inclined.
Mm-hmm.
And I know your show just before, you were talking about entrepreneurship, innovation. We've seen amazing innovation coming from teenagers. And certainly social media has opened up, well, certainly risks, but also opportunities to connect and to innovate, which can be amazing.
Okay.
So I think that really our parental function is to stay close and to help create an environment which will cater to the drive. Definitely not a hands-off, okay, let's hope for the best kind of approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, Doctor, we talked a bit about the negative. So we are going to come to the positive, or was that the positives leading into the negative? So we're going to talk about the positives as well, you know, the positive aspects of adolescence. But before we get into that, I mean, we obviously talked about the risky behavior as well, that you can channel them towards something where they can actually release all that energy on something that is, you know, something that's just more meaningful versus, you know, just engaging in very risky behavior. Now, what happens to the brain function of an adolescent when they have restriction in movement, you know, when you become a lot stricter? Because parents do tend to do that, where you just sort of like, you know, you just become a lot stricter and try to make sure that you put them in line before anything goes wrong. Does that actually, because I would imagine that if they are already, you know, their brain function is wired for risky behavior and they're willing to take those risks of, you know, jumping out through the windows and, you know, so what happens when you put in more restrictions as a parent to their brain?
Yeah, so no, absolutely. So again, the researchers looked at what parenting style elicits certain outcomes and consequences.
Exactly.
And you certainly know that authoritarian parenting, which is very strict, very rule-bound and quite rigid, actually does push for almost like a provocation or for children to kind of take the opposite end and act out. So that's not really something that we want to do. We don't want to create boundaries that feel rigid and that feel suffocating for teens. And so the research suggests that the best parenting style is what we call authoritative. So that there is limits, but it's filled with warmth and flexibility. So it's not unreasonable, you know, that it is a discussion point, that there is space for movement, for understanding what teens are going through, but at the same time, it's not a free-for-all. So that's the permissive parenting style, which also has its own consequences and problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to balance. I think sometimes we think we're being kind, or we think we're kind of setting limits, but we're being too strict. But I think it requires a flexibility. It requires a reflection and a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely there is supervision that's required, and there are limits that actually they're going to push the limits, and that's our job to almost spring them back and bring them back to safety.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, it is 15 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya 959. You are listening to Natalie Solomon, Dr. Natalie Solomon, who is a clinical psychologist, and she's talking to us about the adolescent brain. She wrote a paper and basically just looking at adolescence and looking at the adolescent brain as well. And I suppose it's a very important conversation for a lot of parents out there who have teenagers, who have adolescents, and you're just trying to understand where they are and trying to understand the choices that they make and why they are so difficult at times. times and why they're so prone to risk taking and doing all sorts of things that go against the rules in the house or who you are as a family. So that's the conversation that we are having this evening. If you would like to add in on the conversation, if you'd like to ask Dr. Natalie anything at all, maybe you're looking for a bit of advice dealing with your adolescent at home, the number to dial is 086-000-959. That is 086-000-959. You can SMS us 36959. You can tweet us at Kaya on Air, or you can tweet me personally as well. My Twitter handle is at @sotutu if you'd like to ask any questions to Dr. Natalie Solomon talking about the adolescent brain. Now, Doctor, we were talking about the negatives that come with adolescence, or at least the negative characteristics. But you did say there are some positives as well, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think, again, there's this drive for social connection, and then there is a pushback from adults. But it's the beginnings of the development of intimacy. It's the beginnings of the development of a sense of community and connection. And so, again, in the right kind of environment, you really see kind of this growth in terms of the interdependence, in terms of really creating supportive relationships around them. We also see that there's this intensity and an energy and a vitality and a new understanding and new perspective to life, which is really exciting. You know, they begin to think of things that, you know, often as adults, we don't question things. So they move out of that really concrete thinking to an abstract reasoning, to out of the box kind of strategies. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of, and in fact, I mean, what on Youth Day we see that they challenged the status quo. They weren't willing to accept things as they were, and they were willing to imagine a future that could be different. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it came with dire consequences, but they were willing to push and to see and hope for a future that's different to the one that they were living.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. It's increased creativity, it's kind of this vitality and this energy for life that's very specific to this developmental phase. And then the other upside is that the teenage brain is the most efficient learning machine.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never be more efficient in terms of your learning than during this life phase, which is amazing. You know, memories are made faster. The information processing is so much more efficient. And so they've got this amazing machine at their disposal.
Mm-hmm.
However, again, the risks are that their self-discipline and their task completion and their regulated emotions, their dysregulated emotions, can almost cause an imbalance to this amazing machine. But again, with the right kind of structures, we can help them so they can maximize the potential of their brain at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Is there a peak, Doctor, where they are at their absolute peak adolescence? Because obviously if you're starting at 12 and you're tapering off at about 23, 24, where's the peak? Is that 16?
That's a good question. I'd imagine it might be different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of group it together as a stage, but there might be a peak. I'm not exactly sure though.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I mean, that is the time where, generally speaking, people are studying, people are going to university in that phase. You know, you often speak to mature students, and I'll tell you how hard it is to go back to studying because it just doesn't work as quickly as it used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break now, Doctor. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation and hopefully take some calls as well. For those that want to ask any questions about adolescence, to ask about the behavior, ask about is this normal, is this not normal. So we're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Natalie Solomon, who is a clinical psychologist. The number to dial this evening is 086-000-959 if you'd like to ask any questions about adolescence.
Kaya
959
on the street, on the air. Kaya Talk, Monday to Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m.
It is 21 minutes after 7. You're listening to Kaya 959 and you are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotomayor. And of course, we are together until 8 o'clock. And this evening, we're talking about the adolescent brain. And we're talking to Dr. Natalie Solomon, who is a clinical psychologist. And she wrote a paper about the adolescent brain, just trying to understand adolescence, explaining when it starts, when it ends, you know, what the brain function is, and everything else in between, talking about basically young people. We are taking your calls on 086-000-959. We've got Makosonke on the line. Makosonke, good evening and thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks yourself.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, my question is this. Okay, just for the sake of context, I have two teenagers. The one 16, the one is about 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had this thing that we seem to be creating a problem in that we've discarded everything that was used in bringing us up. Now, not everything is bad. Now, I'm sitting here looking at the, call it the era of certificate of attendance.
Okay.
And everything that comes with that mentality. Are we not raising people who would be inept, who are not going to be self-sufficient going forward?
Okay. Are you talking about in terms of what we give our children now? Are you saying that we give them too much, so much so that they're unable to be, they have the inability to be self-sufficient?
Yeah. That kind of thing. We're raising softies, basically.
Okay, I hear you. I'm not sure if I completely agree, but Dr. Natalie, what would you say to that? You know, Makosonke saying that we are living in an age where we are raising children who are too soft.
So, I mean, it's interesting where we talk about the selfie generation or Gen Z. And the truth is every generation is different. You know, I think our parents probably said the same about us.
Mm-hmm.
And we are raising children for a world which is different to the world that we grew up in, with opportunities and risks, again, that are very different to the ones we know. So sometimes it feels like we want to raise according to what we knew and the way we did it, but the world is very different to the way
it was when we were young.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are certain values that are longstanding and that we really do want to instill in our children in terms of bringing them up with certain mindsets and certain skills in terms of navigating life and its challenges. So, you know, what we often talk about is making sure that our children can manage tolerable doses of stress. And that we don't, I think your caller was talking about the era of the certificate of attendance, where almost anything you do, just showing up, you get applauded for and praised. And so we want to move away from focusing on building children that, first of all, are purely focused on praise,
mm-hmm.
And that don't have an inner sense of value to do things. But also, we don't want to save our children from every challenge that comes their way. And I think sometimes we feel the impulse as parents, and we often talk about helicopter parents or the lawnmower parents, where we almost want to just smooth the path,
mm-hmm.
take away any kind of challenge. And that's certainly not something that we want to do, because we do want to build those resilience muscles.
Exactly, yeah.
But we have to do it at tolerable levels, because either if we give it to them at where we kind of they're overcome by trauma, then they're just going to drown. It has to be developmentally appropriate and tolerable, and we are supporting them alongside, but we don't do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
But you support those
muscles
them
when someone else does it for you. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Makosonke, I don't know if that sort of, you know, answers your question or.
Oh, yeah, in a way, it answers it. But eventually, I always use this as an example to say, when we look at, for instance, the army, we look at any environment where they're trying to develop the best of the best. The best of the best is trained through the hardest possible eventuality that could be. And I'm having a sense that we seemingly are raising kids who would not be able to handle the worst case scenario.
But you know, I don't know, Makosange, and I'm not a clinical psychologist, I'm not trained, but I also think that sometimes when we use examples like army and policemen in order to refer to our kids, and you must also understand that in those settings, you're dealing with a lot of PTSD, you're dealing with a lot of anxiety, you're dealing with people that are under extreme circumstances and that they probably should not be under. And I don't know if we'd want to raise our kids under those circumstances where we have to toughen them up absolutely at any cost. For me personally, I believe that, you know, your children need to be resilient. They need to be able to stand on their own two feet. But at the same time, they don't need to be rocks. They're human beings. I mean, do you really want to be raising people that have absolutely no feelings? That's just my personal opinion for me. If you ask me with the argument, I would say that you want a good balance. I would want my children to be, you know, somewhere in the middle where they're able to stand on their own two feet, they're able to do things for themselves, but at the same time, they still remain and retain their humanity, and they're not just bricks of people, you know. That's just my personal opinion. I just think that sometimes we don't cut young people enough slack. I mean, I remember when I was a lot younger and people would talk about my generation and how, oh my gosh, these kids are softies, they're never going to be able to amount to anything. And I don't think that is necessarily true.
But that's what I 100%. Think. 100%. I agree with you. But the challenge is, at times, I find that we vacillate. And what we do is we go from the one extreme to the total opposite of it, where it becomes also unhealthy. And I wish, for the life of me, we could be able to go from the extreme that our parents did and come back somewhere to the middle without going to the other extreme.
Because as well, you must remember those generations where people were absolutely tough, right, and parents were absolutely tough. A lot of those adults now have got in therapy. I mean, I see it. I mean, I know there's a group that I follow on Twitter as well, and they're all in therapy because their parents were so tough and people are unable to express emotions, you know what I mean? And that's why I'm saying that there needs to be a good balance, in my opinion, because as well, you don't want to raise kids that are going to be sitting in therapy for the next 25 years because, you know, you gave them 10 lashes for every time they didn't bring water from the river. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But fully agree. The problem is, I find that there's lots of us in our generation who want to throw money at the problem.
Yeah.
Almost as if to say, we're coming out of a generation which the biggest problem was resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was poverty all around. And the unfortunate part with poverty is that a poor person thinks the silver bullet to their problem is throwing money at the problem.
Yeah.
Now we're earning salaries that are equivalent to our other races' counterparts. And now, all of a sudden, what we're doing, we're throwing money at the problem.
Okay.
And that seems to be, for me, a big problem, because now we're raising children that have got very little context.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really my issue.
To bring it back to
the conversation, it's a case of, especially now where you're looking at adolescents, when the conversation started, immediately where my mind went to is to say, hang on, if we're saying it's a 24-year-old who's still adolescent, right?
Mm-hmm.
By all calculations, you finish your matric at, let's say, 17, 18.
18, yeah.
First degree already at 21. Second, third. So this person that we're saying is an adolescent could already be in the C-suit.
Mm-hmm.
Making decisions about north of Kendall.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you want an adolescent making decisions about people's livelihoods?
Yeah, and I suppose those are the conversations that we need to be having. And it's one of those arguments that are ongoing, and we could talk about this for the next 5 hours.
Exactly.
But yeah, but thank you so much, Marco Sanke, for your contribution.
You're welcome.
For giving us a call.
Thank
you very much. Doctor, I suppose it's one of those conversations that, you know, we all come from different backgrounds and different perspectives, and it could be an argument that could go on and on and on and on and on. But at some point, I suppose, you know, as parents, we need to choose where we fall and what we would like to see from our kids. I've got a tweet here from somebody that says, can you please help me? I'm not sure if her daughter is an adolescent. She says, my daughter knows how to go in and out of any phone. She can open other apps that her mother can't, and her mom doesn't even know how to use these things. I just want to know that if we want to stop her using a phone, are we going to damage her brain? Because she says her child is very good with the technology, but she doesn't know whether they need to stop her from consuming all that technology. Does it actually affect the brain? And I think this is a very important conversation, Doctor, because a lot of people always ask about screen time and adolescents and children.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I think most of our teenagers are much more technologically savvy than the parents that are raising them, and that can be very tricky because the things that they know about, we don't even imagine. But at the same time, I think that the world of technology is a phenomenal gift, and there's amazing things that's happening, but it can also be dangerous, and it does require certain controls. The difficulty is that we don't always know the controls that are necessary, and then we need to kind of maybe use the resources of professionals to help us put certain controls in our house in terms of the hours that they're allowed to use the phone, the website that they're allowed to surf. There are certain controls that one can put into place, which are important. And then also, it's not a free-for-all. While, they may have phones, those phones were still often bought by adults.
Yeah.
And they do, they are not their property. And so sometimes we are able to take those phones away, set those limits. The golden rules that they often talk about is don't let the child fall asleep with the phone in their room. There's often terrible fights that happen in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
And children aren't able to always resist those kinds of SMSs or WhatsApp groups that are happening. So, again, put in the controls as you would for other aspects. You wouldn't let them go out till all hours of the night. You would have a curfew. So set a curfew in terms of when the phone needs to come out of the room and be given to you. Or you can switch the Wi-Fi off at a certain period of time. But I think we can't take it away completely because this is their world. And actually, they need to learn the rules of engagement in this world. And part of learning is engaging, not disengaging. So we need to do it in a controlled manner, so to allow it, but with the limitations around it.
Okay.
And yes, I mean, there is research in terms of our brains are plastic, and there is an impact in terms of increased exposure to phones. I mean, we're still finding out what those long-term consequences are because we haven't done the longitudinal studies because it is like a current, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly we found that even the way we read has changed, that we read kind of looking down the middle. We've also looked at people's concentration spans in terms of how long they're willing to read. Often you'll see now with on Facebook feeds or they'll say how long the article is, and people are not willing to sit and read long articles. So we have our brain structures have changed as a result of technology. Some for good, some will
not
still,
so good.
We'll figure out. We'll see as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining us, it is almost 20 minutes to 8 o'clock and you're listening to Kaya 959. You are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotomayor, and of course we are together until 8 o'clock. This evening we are in conversation with Dr. Natalie Solomon, and she is a clinical psychologist, and of course we are talking about the adolescent brain. And I think it's a very important conversation. You know, we had a caller earlier, Makosonke, and I think in some aspects we agree, in some aspects we might not agree, but it's a very big conversation, especially when we start talking about adolescents and what to do with them, how to raise them, the best possible decisions that we can make around adolescence, you know. And like I said, I've got small children, so you can't take my word for anything. But you can certainly listen to Dr. Natalie Solomon. So if you would like to be part of this conversation, if you'd like to ask any questions, maybe you're looking for a bit of advice when it comes to your adolescence, the number to dial is 086-000-0959. That is 086-000-0959. You can SMS us 36959. You can WhatsApp us as well, or you can tweet us at Kaya on Air, and you can tweet me personally as well. My Twitter handle is at Soto2, and that WhatsApp number is 0636880959. Now, Doctor, does adolescence affect boys and girls differently, or is it are there differences?
Yeah, certainly there's hormonal differences. I think there's a gendered experience that can be different in terms of often one would see more acting out behaviors in boys. Obviously, this is a generalization, and obviously there are exceptions to the rule. And much of it is also socialized as social constructs in terms of how we've raised our children in a gendered environment. But biologically, there are differences in terms of the hormones that are rushing, you know, in terms of estrogen levels and testosterone levels that are rushing through the systems and have an impact on behavior as well. I think, again, like the generalization is that, you know, girls will tend towards kind of really focusing on relationships and being with, and it would be focused on developing intimacy, and sometimes one would see an increase in depression and anxiety
with girls
in females, as opposed to in males. It would often be more kind of acting out behaviors, get aggressive, getting into fights, etc. But again, I need to qualify that that's a generalization.
Mm-hmm. And it's not definite.
Yeah.
So like in everything else, you know, there are exceptions when there's when there's a general sentence. Okay, well, Doctor,
I want to just go. You know, you said that your kids are still small, and so you can't comment on it. But actually, what I want to say is that's where you sow the seed. That actually, that's the most important part. And that a relationship doesn't happen when they're 12. Mm. A relationship starts at birth, and that's where you set an example of what kind of family values we have. Are you important? Do I listen to you? Do you have space to make decisions? How do I model things to you? So, in fact, it's not something that you just arrive at. At 12. It does feel like that sometimes. It does feel like they've suddenly changed. But you've set the preconditions or the foundations in a certain way in terms of the parenting style that you've created up until that point.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, Doctor, before we go to break, we'll just, you know, steal a little bit of time. So if we're talking about that you need to start when they're still young, right? You start when they're still kids, when they're still babies, you know, and you decide the sort of relationships that you're going to have and what you're going to teach them. Does that, do you find when you look at the research, does that actually carry them through adolescence? You know, in the sense that if you have raised kids or you are in a setting where, we listen to each other, everybody's allowed to make decisions, does that hold them in good stead through their adolescence? Or does it really feel like they literally change overnight? You wake up one morning and you are living with two completely, or if you've got three kids, three strangers in the house.
No, not at all. I mean, I think that you create a template. So we often talk about the internal working model. An internal working model is a template of how you relate to the world. And that's created through the attachment system, which happens from when they're born, really, and the way you engage with them through repeated experiences. So if you can help your children to feel seen, to feel safe, and to be soothed when they are distressed and dysregulated, you create a secure attachment base. And it's from that attachment base that they explore the world, whether it be when they're toddlers or, again, when they're teenagers. But it's that base and that template that you've created early on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Doctor, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we continue with this conversation. If you are just joining us, it is just after 20 minutes to 8 o'clock. And, of course, you're listening to Kaya 959. We are in conversation with Dr. Natalie Solomon, who is a clinical psychologist. And this evening, we're talking about adolescence, and we're talking about the adolescent brain and the definition of adolescence, because I think for a lot of people, we usually just cut it off at about 18, 19. But apparently, it goes on to about 24 years old, where the brain is still growing and it's still changing. So that's the conversation that we are having this evening. If you would like to take part in the conversation, if you'd like to ask any questions at all that relates to your own adolescence at home, the number to dial is 086-000-959. That is 086-000-959. When we come back from break, we continue with the conversation.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
It is now almost 7:45, and of course you're still listening to Kaya 959, and you're listening to Talk With Myself, Sotomayor. And this evening we are in conversation with Dr. Natalie Solomon, who is a clinical psychologist, and we're trying our best to understand the adolescent brain. And she wrote a paper and, did some research into adolescents and their brain. And this is what this conversation is about, all those changes that we see, and not just the physical changes in terms of their behavior, what their needs are, what they relate to, when now suddenly you're not as cool as you used to be. That's the conversation that we're having this evening. Now, Doctor, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about, the values that you raise them, how you raise them, and how that holds them in good stead. Let's maybe backtrack a little bit and try to understand the difference between a child's brain and the adolescent. So we've talked about what it is to be an adolescent and what happens to their brains. But what about a child? Like, just so we can understand the differences, between the two, when you jump from a child to an adolescent.
Mm. So it's the first, they talk about the 0 to 3 year old in terms of neuronally, they have a proliferation of neurons. So it's almost like there's lots and lots of connections being made, and they're just kind of taking in as much of the world around them. And then when we move to the adolescent brain, it's not proliferation, it's pruning. It's almost like if you saw a rose bush and you start cutting away. So they begin to specialize, to be more focused, more efficient. And so that brain is shifting in terms of it's not about everything. It becomes much more about specialization. And in fact, that's why experience is so important, because when you give certain experiences, you give the brain opportunities to specialize.
And choices.
And to really... Yes, and the correct kind of choices. So a child's brain, often a child developmentally, they're quite egocentric, although...
Is it 0 to 3? Because I have a three-year-old and I totally... Listen, they're just like teenagers.
So you think teenagers are as well.
Exactly.
But actually, they have kind of concrete operational thinking. They're not able to abstract. They are just not able to make those kinds of connections, moral judgments, and often a child pre the teenage years, so that's the latency years, they're very rule-bound, but they're bound by the rules for the sake of the rules, whereas the teenager is going to begin to question the rules. Well, why is that important? Why are you saying that? Does it really need to be that way? So really their kind of thinking is very, very different, as well as, the child often, they have got their groups of friends, but the focus is more on adults, winning over adults' admiration or attention.
Whereas, after three? So 0 to 3,
well,
it's basically
even
the ego
way
maniac.
After three, way after, yeah. So right up until late, like, let's say 9 to 11 years old, that brain is really going to be focused on validation, on being good, of following the rules, on kind of the output, but not so focused. So when they move into adolescence, there's a shift completely away from gaining adults approval, and it's much more about peer approval. It's much more about belonging, being part of a group, having your kind of community of peers around you, and much less around what the adults think of you.
Okay, so friends become a lot more important when you are...
Friends are absolutely critical. And in fact, we've seen that those... so interesting that the new research around those who suffered the most around COVID were actually adolescents, young people, because developmentally they're wired to be out in the world. They're wired to be socializing and learning through experiences with others. And we've curtailed that, obviously, that's been hard. Even developmentally, it's not supposed to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that is very interesting. So at the age, so 0 to 3, we've spoken about that. And then when we move, is there a stage between like 4 and like 8 or 9, or that's not a block?
So no, there is. So there was that latency phase, which is really kind of the school-going age child.
Yes, yeah.
And so in that school-going age child, it's about similar to what I said, like learning the rules.
Yeah. They just follow the rules.
Beginning to make friendships. You often find they tittle-tale a lot. You didn't do that, or you
didn't. Yes, I've got a 6-year-old, and she's very hard on rules. You don't do this. If you don't let her, you don't let her. Like, she'll never question. Yes. She follows the rules as they are.
Yes. So, they can be, it's an interesting time. And their brain is quite concrete in terms of they're able to make connections, but on a concrete level. So they can't think about ideas of like morality, but more abstract morality. So, for example, like if somebody steals to feed a baby because they're starving, is that good or bad? That would be bad because they're stealing. So, you know, the more kind of nuanced stuff is much harder for the younger child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the adolescent brain thrives on, is really the gray, really kind of finding, making patterns, understanding things in a more complex way.
Mm-hmm. So then how does it then differ when we say, so we've talked about children, school-going children and adolescents, but now the difference between adolescents and adults in terms of the brain. Because now when you get to 24 and if you finally move out of that stage, what is now the difference? And I'm asking this because I feel like it is that difference between adult and adolescents that makes it so difficult to make the connection between the two, where we now don't understand them and just don't understand what is going on, why are they like this, you know, because now the brain has switched, right? So you are not, you have not been an adolescent in years, so now you don't understand these creatures. So what is the difference then between the adolescent brain and the adult brain?
Yeah. So first I need to say that the brain is plastic and malleable until we die, which is amazing. And actually it can change, so it's not set in stone. But I think there's certain characteristics and certain ways of relating that shift. So I think the dopamine drive shift. I mean, isn't it interesting? I mean, often you think about when you were young and you used to love going on roller coasters, and then as an adult you get, you feel nauseous just thinking about it.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's the shift. You know, the dopamine, it settles. You're not as kind of focused on novelty seeking. Even in terms of your social engagement, your world becomes a little bit smaller, you're much more focused on the family or on good friends. It's not so much about big social events and engagement. So it's, again, that push for social interaction shifts. There is far less focus on the group and on the fitting in. As one becomes an adult, one kind of becomes a little bit more comfortable in one's own skin, one would hope sometimes. And there's kind of more of a push for closer intimacy and connection and self-development as opposed to that social outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And then that emotional intensity, which really does characterize the teenage brain. So in fact, we know that the teenage brain responds to hormones differently, in particular this one hormone called THP, which is supposed to modulate anxiety. So in the adult brain, it calms us down. In the adolescent brain, it makes us more anxious, which is actually like a bit of a fault. And we often see a rise in mental illness in the adolescent years. But they actually have a far lesser capacity to tolerate stress than the adult brain. So you would see that in emotionality that's different between the adolescent and an adult. And in fact, they've actually done fMRI studies, and they've put brain through scanners, and they've noticed that teenage brains read social cues and read emotional images differently to the adult brain. So often they'll read neutral faces as angry. So there's a lot of inaccurate social reading that happens. And so that emotional intensity calms down as one becomes an adult. And then the way we respond to that THP hormone would be it helps us modulate our anxiety as opposed to making it much more intense. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of the things that would help us and discern between, okay, now we're in adulthood. At the same time, we know that, you know, even when we're adults, with an executive, you know, with our executive functioning intact, we still have moments when we make non-adult-like decisions.
Exactly.
You know, our brain, absolutely. You know, there are times when the front part of our brain goes offline, and we make very silly mistakes.
So just before we wrap up the conversation, Dr. Natalie, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what do teenagers need in the sense that, I mean, I know, you know, you did say that, you know, they care more about friendships, they want to be with yes. friends, they don't care as much about adult, you know, what adults think, you know, and approval from adults yes. is not as important as it was when they were a lot younger, you know, just school-going children. So in terms of the associations, what do teenagers need? So you can't, obviously they can't just lump up with their friends. Are adult interactions mm-hmm. very important for teenagers?
Yes, they are, because we do need to be helping them to almost foster their strengths and to minimize risks. So they're not going to think we're important to them, but we actually are very important to them. There's this amazing theorist, Daniel Siegel, and he talks about certain habits of mind. He talks about the mind factor, or the simple seven. And especially, well, for everybody, but especially for teenagers, he talks about helping them create a time in, helping them when they begin to reflect, to really focus on developing introspection. He also talks about really focusing on sleep and recognizing that teenagers' biorhythms shift. They're no longer larks, they become owls, and the melatonin production is different. It kind of is set off much later in teenagers. So we need to understand that, but we also need to help them so that they can consolidate their sleep. Then he also talks about teaching them about exercise, how absolutely important exercise is for modulating our moods and for growing our brain. Mm. And so that's really instilling that importance. He also talks about playtime, that, you know, so much of life feels so serious, but that actually as mammals, one of our basic drives is to play. And so creating opportunities for teenagers to play in collaborative ways, but that actually we need to do that. And then he also talks about downtime, where we almost, we've seen that we often overschedule things, we make them do a million different things, but how important it is for the body and the brain to have time to recharge, to access our flow states, where we have no plans, where we just really, it's just about being and not necessarily about accomplishing. And then very importantly about connecting time. So they do need us. And to create those rituals and opportunities for connection, whether it be dinner time, whether it be going for walks together, but do create those opportunities where you can connect. They might not necessarily tell you their intimate secrets, but you've created an opportunity that they could. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, they begin to have, it really is about having time together, which eventually they can use it as they wish. But mm-hmm. we do have to create that opportunity for them.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Natalie. How do we get hold of your paper if somebody wants to read your paper and, you know, just find out about the research?
So I just wrote it really wasn't a paper. It was just a real little summary because I work for Bella Vista Share, yeah. and we do a lot of training on parenting, mm. on raising children, and on the adolescent. So it's best to contact through www.bellavistashareonline.org.za, mm-hmm. And you could get hold of me through there.
And this is anything to do with parenting, if you're looking for any bit of advice
about
parenting.
Yes. It's not only about adolescence. That's one aspect that we do some training on, but we do lots of training about parenting in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Doctor. It has been a very mind-opening conversation, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So that was Dr. Natalie Solomon, and she was joining us to talk about the adolescent brain and just the ins and outs and how it works and the intricacies and why they're so different. That's the conversation that we were having this evening. And that's it from me, Sotumea. I'm back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on Kaya 959. Do enjoy the rest of your evening and what is left of June 16th. From me, it is good night.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.